WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Jazz critic Kevin Whitehead has a review of the trends in jazz over this past decade.
One sign of the continuing health of jazz in the 80s was that so many people were at each other's throats. Neo-boppers, neo-funksters, and free improvisers all sneered at each other. The critics, not to our credit, did our best to egg them on. But all that infighting showed how passionately committed to jazz its players are, and also confirmed the amazing diversity of jazz in the 80s. No other decade has been quite so historically minded. Whatever style you could think of, ragtime, Dixieland, swing, bebop, cool jazz, modal jazz, post-free structuralism, whatever it was, somebody someplace was playing it, and it was getting recorded. This retrospection was partly fueled by the big boom in jazz reissues in the late 80s, triggered by the record industry's big switch from LPs to big profit CDs. But musicians were looking back even before that. The dominant figure in 1980s jazz was a militant conservative. Like him or hate him, trumpeter Wynton Marsalis was the focal figure in 80s jazz. He even had an article in TV Guide 2 weeks ago. Marsalis focused a lot of public attention on jazz, but his influence wasn't all good. No musician is so insistent that his way is the right way, and none has been so determined to turn back the clock. On his 1982 debut album, Marsalis evoked the sound of the Miles Davis Quintet of the mid-1960s. He ended the 80s echoing the raucous and bluesy trumpet kings of the 1920s. In the course of 7 years, he'd moved back 4 decades. Other musicians revisited the past in less literal ways. One major trend was the emergence of medium-sized bands, mostly septets and octets, led by such composers as John Carter, David Murray, Ed Wilkerson, and Henry Threadgill. Their units combined the agility of small groups with the power of big bands. One influence on those writers was the 1920s pianist Jelly Roll Morton, the first great formalist among jazz composers. At his best, Morton would reorchestrate a piece from one chorus to the next to make a small band sound bigger. That's a lesson 80s composers took to heart. One sign of this flexibility was the prominent role that Threadgill, Wilkerson, and other leaders found for the cello in their ensembles. They could use the cello like a violin, a bass, a trombone, or a guitar, deploying it in a band's front line or in the rhythm section. Here's cellist Deirdre Murray in Henry Threadgill's 7-piece band. A preoccupation with manipulating structure and color was also evident in jazz from Europe. European jazz still escapes the notice of most American critics, who for one reason or another have always been pretty chauvinistic. Overseas, there was a resurgence of what used to be called third stream music, music which falls somewhere between jazz and classical without really being either. For my money, one of the most interesting composers around is Austria's Franz Kogelmann. He's inspired by the airy textures of cool jazz musicians like Shorty Rogers and Jerry Mulligan, and by the structural daring of Viennese composer Alban Berg. Other jazz musicians also favored quick changes in texture and mood, like New York saxophonist John Zorn. Zorn also showed his appreciation for the past, reviving compositions by hard bop jazz men of the 1950s. One downside of jazz in the 80s is that there weren't many original new soloists. A couple of the most promising, saxophonists Steve Coleman and Greg Osby, too often kept their sounds buried under electronics or hemmed in by funky rhythms. As for what jazz will be like in the 90s, well, reading critics' predictions from decades past has convinced me that prognostication doesn't pay. It's almost always wrong. But I will hazard one guess. Sometime in the 90s, some knucklehead will start asking, "Is jazz dead?" And the right answer will be no. The music is too vital and too deeply rooted in world culture to die off. It'll be here for another 10 years easy, and will probably be around for a whole lot longer than that.
Kevin Whitehead is a regular contributor to Downbeat and Cadence.